Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. Today, we're looking at how energy sector incumbents are responding to the transition from old to new energy. In the 2000s, you would regularly meet people in the energy sector who doubted that change was really coming. Distributed generation was viewed, for example, as an annoying fly that could be swatted away by some people. In the 2010s, there's been gradual acceptance that the transition is underway. And in some markets, the impacts have already been significant. Asset valuations and share prices have been battered for traditional incumbent utilities. Today, most people see that the future energy business will be quite different to how it has been. But recognition and response are two different things. The Kodak moment is one of the most famous examples of a company failing to respond to disruption, as a film giant failed to respond to the disruption that digital cameras brought. And the Harvard Business Review has a great article about their downfall. And I think there are two key takeaways from the article. First, recognizing something and doing something about it are quite different things. And secondly, doing something and doing the right thing are also different things. So today we're going to be looking at how we can relate recognizing something, and doing the right thing can be applied to companies in the midst of the energy transition. And to help me explore this, I'm delighted to welcome Eric Morell to today's podcast. Hello, Eric.
Hi, John.
Eric, thanks for joining us. And I've invited you to this discussion as, like me and my colleagues here at Delta, you have spent over 10 years working with energy companies, helping them to respond to the transition. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the focus of your experiences over the last 10 years and your background?
So first of all, thanks for inviting me, John.
No problem.
I've been consulting for energy firms, utilities for 10 years. I have created in 2010 my own consulting firm, specialized in energy transition and digitization. Before that, I have been serving the industry for 25 years, especially at Schneider Electric, where I led the corporate business strategy and also the first BU dedicated to smart grids and energy efficiency. So I've been active for almost 30 years in the new energy world.
Great. Thanks, Eric. So I think we'll have a really interesting discussion about how our experiences and how and the companies are responding and the challenges they're facing. But of course, keeping confidential details confidential. Eric, I described the lessons from the Kodak moment, those three things of recognizing something, and doing the right thing. Do you think we can use this model to look at how energy companies are responding to the energy transition?
I think it applies quite well. Maybe I will describe a little bit differently the third stage, because facing so many disruptions and changes in the energy world, it's always difficult to know from scratch if we are doing the right thing. So I would prefer saying acting consistently and consciously. What makes the difference between the stage two and stage three is to know what we do, to know why we do it, and to know why we act with a certain manner. So in other words, with a finalized strategy.
So recognizing something, you can do something, but doing the right thing, clearly there are many ingredients to that. And as you say, having the right strategy, the consistent and conscious approach to doing the right thing.
Right.
And in my introduction, I already talked about most people recognize a challenge. How do you feel about that if we take those three categories of recognizing something, doing something, and doing the right thing? Where would you put energy companies? How would you allocate them to those three different categories of recognizing, doing something, and doing the right thing?
I am amazed every day by the number of companies that have some difficulties to recognize things. They often deny changes, or maybe the depth of changes. So maybe to be a little bit provocative, I would say that 80% roughly of the companies, energy companies, utilities, recognize what is happening. But a significant percentage don't.
And is that, where in the companies do you see that, Eric? Is that in the, in your experience, in the leadership positions, in the middle management, or is it irrespective of where people are in the companies?
I would say both, meaning that in the same company, you can have executives that recognize the changes and are conscious about what has to be done, and some middle managers that are scared and feel they can lose in this situation. So we may have a gap, but we have also companies where the middle management is aware of the situation and is struggling against the executives to be able to move forward by having a management team more conscious about the situation. So it's difficult because the situation within a company can be heterogeneous.
Yeah. And from my experience, I see sometimes a lack of a long enough term focus. So people very, very focused on the next 6 months, the next 12 months, maybe the next budget period. But a lack of sometimes, well, people may recognize the challenge and change, but not looking forward enough and really addressing that.
You're right. And I think once more, we are facing so many changes that to realize the consequences, we have to think beyond the next month. Because if you think in this time frame, you have always the good reasons to think that you have time to react.
Yep.
and you have time to act. So to become conscious about the depth of the changes, you have to extend your period of consideration. Yeah, you're right.
And then if we look at the next bucket of doing, so we've had recognizing, the second bucket is doing something, and the third one doing the right thing. What percentage will you put in the doing something, but not necessarily doing the right thing bucket?
Among the 80 companies, or 80% companies I mentioned recognizing the situation, a significant percentage is scared to move forward, scared to do the wrong thing. And so they have some difficulties to act. So I would say that maybe something like 50% are really acting. And what I observe also, I don't know if you observe the same, but among these 50%, maybe half of them are just acting to act, to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
Not really focused on deep changes and a real adaptation of the company to the changes.
I completely agree, Eric. I'd probably separate that into two groups. One who just want to do something so they can communicate it publicly. And another lot that probably don't know what to do. So they think, okay, we'll run some trials, some pilots, but without any clear strategy or view of what they'll do beyond that first trial or pilot. So they feel good because they're doing something, but it's not really necessarily a proper strategy or approach.
That's right. What I have seen in several customer surveys is that the first strategy, consisting in acting with no real goal except communicating, begin to be sanctioned by the customers, and we have more and more feedbacks in these customer surveys of customers who are more and more conscious about the situation, who want their utility to move forward, they are ready to have difficult relationship to change their supplier and so on if their historical incumbent supplier is not responding correctly to the changes.
Mm. Okay, and then in this last bucket of doing the right thing, and you expanded on that earlier, what percentage would you put that are acting consistently and consciously with a clear approach?
To be once more provocative, I would say 5%.
5%?
5% of companies having defined a real approach based on a vision, which is shared in the company, because it's not sufficient to have executives nurturing a vision without sharing it with the whole company, and especially with the middle management. So maybe it's a little bit more, but not more. And I want maybe to point out with this very low percentage, the fact that many executives think they have a strategy, think they have worked and share what to do. And in reality, when we see that with distance and from outside, this is not the case.
Yeah, okay. So the percent, if you measured it by executives who claimed they had a strategy, it would be a lot higher. But if it fits your consistent, conscious strategy, that's not just executives, but across the company, then that falls a lot more. And why do you think that is, Eric? What's the, because that's, you know, if that's right, that's not great. We've been in many, many years now knowing this energy transition is happening. These companies are using consultants, research companies like me, you, many others. What's stopping them? Why is it only 5%?
I think, based on my experience, that it's very difficult for many executive teams to draft a strategy with so many uncertainties, because they have to review all the strategic process methods, tools, and so on. The usual methods and tools don't apply in such a situation with so many changes, so many disruptions, and so on. And I see many people scared to move forward, scared to investigate an unknown world, unknown processes, unknown ways of working. I don't know if you see the same, but I am surprised to see so many people afraid, scared, and frozen by this fear.
So like a rabbit's being frozen by a car headlight approaching. I see the same, Eric, often. And I think for me, part of it is the way that utilities have used to be making decisions. And typically, it's a small number of large investment decisions with those decisions de-risked to quite a strong degree. And making decisions where there isn't perfect information or evidence about the likely success or failure, I think is a culture change for many utilities. So what would the take up of a certain offering be? We don't know. Well, what evidence can we have? Well, we can trial, we can test, we can do customer research, but we still won't know until we try. And that's, I think, I see that one of the big barriers. It's that cultural way of making decisions and dealing with uncertainties and possibilities of failure.
I observe a sort of paradox, because we know the utilities world. They have a huge stake, which is to preserve the continuity of service for the whole economy. And so they cannot take so many risks because they have to sustain the same quality of service, and in some cases to improve their quality of service. And so by a certain extent, what has to be done to face the energy transition is also taking risks that may damage in their mind this continuity of service and the level of performance they have to respect, because it will be very costly to have some shutdowns or blackouts and so on. It's not bearable, but they cannot hide themselves because behind this reason. And you are right to mention this trial stage that can be achieved by each utilities, because by trialing they can minimize the impact of any changes, and they can test the potential link between their actions and their performance to be able to respect this level of performance and to keep their continuity of service.
Yeah, so trialing can certainly help learn and reduce the uncertainty, but there's many vendors or as a service providers that are looking to do deals with utilities or energy retailers who I think are quite scarred by trials. They've learned through some hard experience that a trial may be well and good to learn, but if you get to the end of the trial and then there's no clear commitment or strategy, then as a vendor, they're no further forward. So I'm interested, Eric, how you see, or your experience in how effective trials are. Do you see this risk that you just trial without anything happening beyond it? Or do you see lots of examples of where people are approaching trials in the right way?
You're right, John. I observe the same. You have trial and trial. In some cases, a trial is a stage of an implementation process. So within your project organization, you include a new stage, which is this trial stage, allowing you to be more flexible, to test on a limited territory. And once you have proven, adjusted your solution, you extend it. And you have also trials, which are not aiming at refining a solution, but just reinforcing the convictions or the fears of some managers. Mm-hmm. And in that cases, yes, you're right. Trials are some ways to delay or just bury some projects or some solutions.
Or to show that, as you said earlier, you're doing something. So for public relations, communication, look, we're doing something.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes during the trials, the teams face difficulties because the new energy confront them with new technology, new skills, decompartmentalization of the energy systems and so on. They are not used to that. Mm. And sometimes the trials reveal some difficulties they have not anticipated and so on. And just because we are involved in a trial, we don't look at solving these difficulties, finding solutions and so on, but we just discontinue the trial just by saying that we have too many difficulties to move forward and to succeed.
Hmm. Eric, let's we've talked about some of the challenges. Let's look at some companies now that we think are responding in good ways to the challenges. So whether they're in that 5% you mentioned of the ones with clear and conscious approaches and strategies, I'm not sure. Who would you pick from looking across Europe as an interesting example of someone who's in that 5% or close to that 5%?
We have several companies that pave the way to the new energy world. I think each of these companies we can mention are showing the interest or value of one action, one component of the changes to be implemented in a utility. We can list first Centrica, maybe close to Engie, which are companies that have developed a vision, begin to share this vision, even if in some cases it has still to be completed.
Yeah.
And now they are at the execution time, and having a vision helps them to target some acquisitions or launch some innovative initiatives and so on. And we see these two companies pretty much aggressive, consistent in their communication, consistent in their actions. You certainly know Centrica well because it's in your neighborhood.
And we've had people on the podcast from Centrica and from Engie. Centrica from their aggregation business that they bought a couple of years ago, and Engie from their heating business, developing heat as a service. So I think they're good examples of companies that have set out a vision and they've acted on that either through internally reorganizing and innovating or acquisitions. What, from looking at them, Eric, would you highlight any one or two challenges in that execution phase you talked about?
I think all the utilities are first facing the challenge to adapt their organization, because more and more initiatives are cross-functional, cross-department, and so on. And they have been organized by silos for years. Everyone knows that. And in utilities, you had people dealing with electricity, other with gas, other with heat, and so on. And all these businesses have to be connected today, including the emerging services activities. So this is the first point.
And I've seen that. And you take a new area, like I'll pick electric vehicles, for example. It's not obvious in which silo it should sit, and maybe it just shouldn't sit in any silo because it's connected to the customer business, the smart charging is connected to the energy trading business. It's an asset business if you're installing infrastructure. The yesterday silos are probably not the right way to organize for the future, but reorganizing a big business with several thousand employees is tough.
Reducing the impact of silos is one dimension. For the EV story reveals other needs. The first one is to grow marketing skills within utilities, because utilities have not been used to develop these marketing skills, and first of all, to segment their customers. And what is very difficult for utilities is that their segmentation is not the same for all the offerings. You don't segment the customers the same for EV charging needs or for electricity sales or for energy efficiency services and so on. So it's a real difficulty and it's a real complexity.
Maybe one other company we can each pick out. One that I see that I'd like to mention is Eneco, the Dutch utility. And the thing I'd like to highlight there is a number of small, relatively small acquisitions or stakes have taken in companies. And what I can see there is they're putting a lot of bits of the jigsaw together in terms of the skills, capabilities, competences they'll need in the future. So for example, from taking a stake in a data science firm to a stake in a heating business in Germany, bringing their smart home partner in-house through acquiring that, it's building a lot of the right competences that I think a company will need to succeed in a new energy future. Eric, anyone else you'd like to highlight or mention that you think's got some good ways of responding, maybe in or close to that 5% that you mentioned?
You're right, mentioning Eneco is important, and we may come back on that example later. I think there is another example which is interesting, which is Enel. And it's maybe linked to the Eneco case, because what is at stake when we face so many disruptions and the need to readapt a company is the struggle between the teams that innovate and the teams that have to sustain the performance and the profitability of the existing businesses. And in many companies, leaders of the existing activities are imposing constraints to the innovators because they don't want their business to be disturbed by innovations, to be cannibalized, and so on. And certainly the reason why Enel decided to create Enelix to bear all the innovative activities without having to refer to the existing businesses, and so to avoid these constraints.
Yeah, and I guess you get the advantage of avoiding those constraints. The challenge is you may be, it's harder to capture some of the synergies between, for example, an aggregation business and a supply business if you've separated them. But there's no one perfect approach.
Yeah, that's right. And the choice made by Eneco is to acquire the competencies and to try to build internally based on these competencies.
Yeah.
This is certainly less disturbing for the organization, less disturbing for all the employees. Certainly, if they succeed, more powerful, because the competencies embedded internally and included in the organization will train the others, will pull the others, and so on. So this is certainly a best way, which is difficult, is to combine in the same company different business models, different decision processes, because each of these activities require different ways to be managed. And this is certainly a difficulty to be flexible enough at the executive level to manage this diversity of activities.
And I think from the discussion, Eric, it's clear there's no one right approach. There are many different approaches, and the right approach for a particular company will depend on many, many factors. Its appetite for risk, its capital, its size, its culture, and so on.
It's the reason why at the beginning I said acting consistently and consciously instead of doing the right thing, because the right thing is always different from a company to another one, because you have not the same environment.
Yeah.
And because the right thing is linked also to your strategy and to your choices. So you may make other choices than your competitors, and both are doing the right thing, because they act consistently. You understand what I mean?
No single right thing, but make a choice as to what you think the right thing is for your company and be clear and consistent. Eric, as always, time is getting the better of us in these discussions. So two final questions for us to discuss. One, we talked about the Kodak moment at the beginning. So is the transition to new energy really a Kodak moment for the energy sector? What do you think?
I would say yes and no.
You're hedging your bets, Eric.
Yes, because all companies are facing a significant shift, as Kodak did a few years ago, because many may die if they don't adapt. So for that reason, I would say yes. But I would say no, because all energy companies can be aware of the threats. They are known, they are discussed, they are commented. And also because regulation will assure that all economical players, especially the industry, will not lose continuity of service. So they will pay attention that the changes will not damage the performance of the energy systems, and it will be certainly more secure for the energy players than the environment experienced by Kodak.
Yes, I would say it's definitely not a Kodak moment if you're a network company, because as you say, the regulator won't allow the network company to will demand that continuity of service. If you're a pure retailer or a retailer with the wrong type of generation asset, then I think maybe it could be a Kodak moment because you're probably more exposed to fast moving change. Second question, and this I guess I'd like to answer as well, is from our experiences, I was going to say the top three pieces of advice that we'd give to a traditional energy company, but let's pick the top piece of advice. So if there was one bit of advice, Eric, you could give to a company that's not in that 5%, but maybe in that middle ground of doing something but not the right thing, what bit of advice would you give them?
I think the first one will be, except for some of the biggest energy companies, focus yourself on some activities, on some customers, on some know-how and so on, because energy companies have been used for years to address everything by themselves. And this is not feasible anymore, I think.
And by that, do you mean either partnerships, or don't think that you can be good at absolutely everything? Work out where your core competence and skills will lie.
If you want to focus on some know-how, you can rely on partners for the skills you don't want to develop internally. But you can question also your focus on some activities or some customers and so on, and it will push the companies to question the relationship they have between business strategy, business stakes, business targets, and the political stakes, which happens quite often, as many energy companies have public shareholders. But this is to be questioned, because I think that today all the energy companies cannot achieve everything by themselves.
Sure. And I think my advice, Eric, would be similar, which would be build a clear vision of where you want to play and what you want to do, and build consensus either throughout the company or, in the NLX example, a part of the company, so that you have alignment up and down the business on where you want to play and what skills and competences you'll need to develop and do that. Okay, we've covered a lot of ground in half an hour, but we have reached our half an hour. So, Eric, thanks very much for joining.
Thank you, John. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, as always, to our listeners for downloading and listening to the podcast. We'll be back next week and look forward to welcoming you then. Goodbye.